Loud. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by Johnstone Fine Foods. Buy premium Irish dry-aged beef at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to episode 1, season 4 of Dishing It Out.
Season 4, guys. We're back with a bang.
Gary O'Hanlon here with my fabulous co-host,
Gareth Mullins.
We're back, yes.
We're back. I'm delighted to be back. You?
Pockets are heavy, man. We have a sponsor. We have a sponsor on board.
You said you were going to be nice and subtle about that. Yeah. Not only have we got a sponsor.
It's one of our boys, Johnstone Beef, who, do you know what? Those boys owe us a ton of money, anyway, I'd say, if you think about it. But no, jokes aside, we're absolutely thrilled to have Johnstone Beef. It's look, we've been buying it, and we're not buying it to just get them to sponsor the pod. I think we've been buying it, I don't even know now, it must be 14 years, or I'm trying to think. 2008 was when I started buying it anyway. So a long, long time customer and lover, and a dry aged beef product that, you know, I've raved about all over the world. I even brought it to France for the 5 years that I cooked in the chateau there. You're the same, Gareth, since you took over control of the marker. You've kind of been a
Used it in my previous job, and I exclusively use it in the hotel. It's the only beef that I use. I actually have a fridge in the restaurant that I hang some of the Johnstone beef in. Yeah. And we, you know, we serve different cuts of it. And really, do you know the other time that Johnstone really came into, it actually came into my home was over lockdown.
Yeah.
Because when lockdown happened, Johnstone Beef set up a different arm of their company where the public could buy, and you could never do that before. And I know both you and I, we helped the lads with a cookery book around grilling. Yeah. I've actually done 2 books with them. So look, they're not only business partners, they're friends of mine, but more importantly than all of that, they have the best beef in the country, in my view. And the reason they have that, and I'm going to get a little bit technical here, but just, I know that people, I get messages about us using the chefy terms, and people kind of enjoy that. Dry aged beef, there's 2 ways of aging beef to make it tender and more delicious. You can either dry age, which means it hangs on the bone, normally as a half carcass or a quarter carcass, in this big fridge where there's loads of air moves through. And while the air is drying the beef is actually decomposing, not to get too, not to use those type of words, but it starts to decompose and the moisture that's in the beef starts to leave, and then it starts to develop flavour. That's what's going on. The other process for aging beef is probably where you might know this, but you're probably eating much more of this because it's what supermarkets do. They wet age beef.
Back, yeah.
So after the beef is slaughtered and it's butchered, it's put into a vac pack bag and it's vacuum packed, and the aging process happens in there. There's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly legal, perfectly safe. Also makes beef more tender, but it definitely doesn't bring the flavour that dry aging does. So we now and have an opportunity to bring you beef, because you can buy Johnstone Beef online at www.johnstonebeef.com, where you can go and buy restaurant quality beef at home. So if you're a listener of ours and you hear us talking about all these different cuts, Chateaubriands, Cote de Boeufs, ribeye steaks, you know, beef tallow is another product that they use, which is basically dry aged beef fat.
Yeah,
uses the most amazing roast potatoes.
I mean, you cook a Morris Piper chip beef dripping chip. I remember walking into Hawksmoor in London many, many years ago. We have a Hawksmoor here now in Ireland as well, in Dublin. But when Hawksmoor came about first, I always remember that was the one thing that jumped out on the menu. You know, like they cooked the steak over there in the Jasper. Like, it's this kind of really high-end grill. And I just saw beef dripping chip. It was like it was a neon lights coming up off the menu, you know what I mean? But just the depth of flavor. I mean, if you like roasting a joint on a Sunday and making your Yorkshire puddings with beef dripping, it's just flavor on flavor. And again, that's another thing that's in the box. And I think we're gonna add a recipe segment as well this season, are we? We're gonna try and do a recipe from the boxes.
Yeah, so they sell a couple of boxes. They have a barbecue box, which obviously this time of year is perfect, but they also do a roast box. So we're going to do a recipe a week from that box. So if you do, if and when you decide to go and order that box, You can either cook the recipe that we've shared, or you can obviously do your own. It's obviously all based around beef. The other thing, what I really like about Johnstown as a business is that they don't choose beef because of the type of animal that it is. So, yeah. Meaning they don't just use Hereford or Charolais or Limousine
or Angus.
Angus, yeah, exactly. They actually, the beef is, the cow is x-rayed for marbling content. And again, as this series goes on, you might hear us talking about marbling a little bit more. But basically, marbling is the fat that goes through the meat. And as we know, you've heard us saying it here before, generally speaking, fat equals flavor. So if you marry those things, the dry aging on the bone, the well marbled beef, all encompassing with craft butchery, what you end up is this really premium product. And we're delighted now that we have Johnstown on as a sponsor, because obviously we're going to elevate their business now to new heights, hopefully.
Well, we better, or it'll be a one-season job.
Oh, well, look, they're top guys, and as I said, master butchers. So delighted to have them on the board. So, yeah, looking forward to the new season ahead.
And speaking about the new season ahead, I'm really excited about the guest. I mean, I'm pretty sure you're a Dempsey's Den
big
fan.
Big time. It's the leg of home skill to watch that.
It's the leg at home up from the end of the road outside McGee's house. I had about a quarter of a mile to punch out from the bus. But, I mean, literally anybody in and around their 40s, late 30s, early 40s, where we fall into, we all grew up watching Dempsey's Den. And Ian has just been an icon of Irish radio.
He's a legend, isn't he, of the Irish?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, for all the years I'm coming here to Marconi House, I've never done a show. I've actually never met him. I'm really excited to see him, you know. It's going to be lovely to have him on board. Yeah, so we've Ed to thank for getting his hands on our boy Ian.
Yeah, he owes me, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's good. So yeah, Ian Dempsey coming up. I think he was on the restaurant one stage too. It was before my time though, so I don't know if he's a dab hand in the kitchen or if he's clean useless. But
he's going to give us the down low on Zig and Zag. That's
he'll give
we're
us the down low on Zag. I always wanted to know who Zig and Zag were. You know, I wonder, should I ask him?
We'll ask him.
Probably a state secret.
And look at all the other things that are back on. Obviously, we're doing our conundrums. So please get your questions into us as always. And we have the recipe, as we said. So looking forward to the next 12
weeks. Who's going to do the first recipe? I suppose you, Billy Big Balls, because you have control issues, yeah?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, of course, okay. As always.
We'll let you do the first one then. So,
Good to see you, Gary. I miss
thinks,
you, brother.
He thinks he's the boss. I just let him keep thinking that, you know what I mean? Good lad, guys.
Good
hang about,
back.
Don't go anywhere. Okay, so joining Gareth and I today on Dishing It Out, I'll tell you what, my 9 or 10 year old self would be pinching itself right now, because I think everybody our age knows you, Ian Dempsey. I have to say, it's amazing to have you.
Gary, thank you very program. Much. And Gareth,
I mean,
how are we doing?
I don't want to make you feel old. I mean, I'm old now, but I mean, I literally grew up watching you like on Dempsey's Den. I don't think there was ever a day that we didn't watch it.
Really?
Yeah, I swear to God, yeah. Every single day it was on the TV. I always think back to chatting to Ken Doherty when he did the restaurant, and we'll touch on your time on the show later on heard that you're on it. But I remember Ken telling me whenever he won the World Championship that there was over 20 million people watching the show. And then it made me think, I was like, sure, look, back in the day, it was either 3 channels or 6 channels, but no more. You know, before Sky and before this.
How long did that run for, though?
If you're on TV.
Well, I started doing it when I just came back from, I think it was around 1986. I started doing it on my own. Right. Then Zig and Zag came into it, obviously.
Whose thought process was Zig and Zag? Like, were you part of that? Like, let's bring it to...
We did one whole season, and we started with a studio that was just kind of empty. And then people started sending in little cuddly toys and pictures and all that. So it started looking a bit more colourful. And then we said, let's try and add to it even more. And we said, can we bring in, something that moves a little bit? So we had to try and get these.
And come out like a brainstorm type of a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so they brought them in. But on RT's budgets at the time, they weren't as flahoolic as they may have been. But they said, okay, Zig can come in on Mondays and really? Zag can come in on Wednesdays.
Right.
So and then on Fridays, the two of them came in because that's the budgetary constraints. And then they realized on the Friday they have to be together all the time, you know, because that's the whole bouncing off them. But it was fantastic. I was there for about maybe 4 years, I think. I think 1990.
So you started that program,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah. And I think they said afterwards, because I decided to give it up, in 1990. It was just getting too much. I was doing breakfast on the radio and I was then going over to do that, and I wasn't getting home till about 7:30. We just had our son, Shane, who's now 34 or something like that, and in 1990, and I wasn't seeing him, and my wife was wrecked, and so we decided to call it a day on the whole thing. But they said, never give a show the surname of the person again, because it was Dempsey's dad. And I remember even afterwards, Ray Darcy took it over, and even then he was getting his payment checks for coming in as Dempsey's Den, because the admin didn't change it around, you know. But anyway, I was fantastic. And I mean, people used to say, well, you know, how did you write the script for that or whatever? There was no script, you know. We just sort of said, we'll start here and we'll end here, and then whatever happens in between.
Did it take a bit of getting used to, like, talking to two teddy bears, more or less? Big personalities now, those two.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was difficult, because you were aware that there were some human beings beneath them, so you just have to make sure you made eye contact.
Yeah, never looked down or whatever.
I think there were actually table tennis balls.
Right,
their
really?
Eyes. You know, so you had to make sure that you kept looking at them rather than looking down to see what was going on there. But it was magical stuff.
It really was.
And people still say to me all the time, you know, they say, "Oh, I've got to remember you on the Den," and you're saying to yourself, "My God, that's a long, long time ago." It really is.
Yeah, and then it was obviously, I mean, you were the biggest catch then for Today FM as a new station.
Yeah.
I mean, usually you hear over the years people leaving other, like, commercial stations, whatever, and like RT being the Holy Land.
Yeah.
You're already in the Holy Land. And
I know. I think my mother was devastated. Like, you know, somebody would choose to actually leave RT. Yeah.
It's always huge news, but when someone leaves.
Yeah. I mean, it probably was a brave move on your part, was it? Or did you ever feel if it went?
Well, I think I was at an age where I said, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And I was always into kind of commercial radio. I liked the idea of people, you know, like that there was a boss who owned it. Like RT, there's no boss. And sometimes that can affect.
You prefer a bit more pressure, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit. So that you have to try and live up to expectations.
Well, weirdly enough, I get that. I think, with chefs, we work in high pressure environments. And I think if ever, and I'm sure Gareth, he may agree or disagree, I nearly think you'd agree, like, but I nearly find if I go too long where I feel like, geez, everything just seems a bit too easy, you're like going, something's not right here, like, I should feel a bit more and you tend to perform better when your butts are turning.
I was listening to one
of these
finance guys about, you know, building a better future and all, and just that old
self-help, Gareth, was it?
Yeah, one of them, you know, one of these business things, you know.
You're struggling, Gareth.
Yeah. I was looking deep, right? I was looking deep, but there was, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And he said, if it's not broke, break it.
And it's, I heard that about radio as well.
Well, it's like a motto we use in the kitchen.
I'd
constantly review something that we do all the time, and I'd be like, and the lads would be looking at me going, why are we looking at this? We sell loads of it. Yeah. Everybody loves it. I'm like, let's just revisit it. I'm not saying that we have to change it.
Yeah.
And some, 9 times out of 10, you lead it or you'll taste it.
I love that.
Do you know what? I'm changing this. And they'd be all looking at me going, what is actually wrong with you? But then regulars will go, did you just do something different to the club sandwich?
I like it.
Yeah, so I think it's a...
Well, I like the club sandwich in the market.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
We've made a few.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very nice. No, but actually, it's funny you say that, because we go to Portugal a lot and, you know, in the Algarve, and we go to the same restaurants all the time. And, like, we must be going there for about 30 years.
Right.
At least once a year. And the menu is exactly the same. You know, and it's always a nice turbot here.
Oh, yeah, this, lovely.
Or John Dory, they love that one down there. But it's exactly the same, but I love it. Yeah. You know, I mean, there is a familiarity about it.
There's a few places down around Ireland. Like, there's a place in, like, my wife goes the odd time now. She was mad about it on one of her last visits. Like, but it's a restaurant that I think it has the same menu for 20 odd years, and I'm like going, sweet Jesus, like, how are they? And
it's the busiest
restaurant in the Midlands, and they have a takeaway business, and I'm mystified at, like, how they motivate a team, like, but then again, they probably have a crew there, and, you know, as you say, like, they're definitely not trying to break what's not broken, you know what I mean? Like, and look, fair play, but as you say, going abroad and seeing that, but you're probably partly still looking forward to that turf when you're on the flight, right?
Absolutely. Well, that's
You're one of the boys that they don't change it because of the legs.
Exactly.
You
come all the time. And they get a throughput of like every 2 weeks, there's new people coming, I suppose.
There's
you know,
that so
it's
too.
Not as if it's the same people.
Yeah.
Is food a big part of your life, your week, your makeup?
I've become less interested in food in the last few years for some reason.
Since you got 2 stars on the restaurant.
Wouldn't bring that up. That's a long time ago.
I mean, let's just, you know, just for the record, Ian was on the show before I joined 14 years ago. And I tell you now, Matt, it's not easy to get 2 stars. I have to know what went wrong.
Yeah, you mean, are you serious? I was delighted with 2 stars.
That is a nightmare. I mean,
I went a little bit basic, to be honest with you. So I did things like, you know, I tried to keep it, you know, for the everyday person who might be watching the show. And I was doing things like little sort of mini slider things. And I was doing, I did a John F. Kennedy soup that it was, it was his favorite in his local Boston restaurant. Oh. I tried to recreate that. But I do remember, it's funny you say you weren't there. I remember when you kind of do all the prepping for it and get it together, and then there's a kind of a tasting.
Yes.
Where they come along. And I remember the looks on some of their faces.
Well, that's the only time.
What the hell are you
That's the only this? Time yeah. we're allowed to have any influence. Like even in the meeting beforehand and all day, that is literally the only time we're allowed to influence. And then if it's you or whomever it may be listens to it or doesn't change it or don't change it, it's all down to you. You're
that's
the
where
you'd
hear me saying, if it's not broke, break it.
Well, that's it.
And it's usually where I'm breaking loads of stuff at that stage.
I probably needed to have you there. That's probably
I've had some interesting tastings over and the problem with the starter chef, right, is that tasting is usually around 4 o'clock. It's almost always late. It's meant to be 3:30. It's usually 4:30. You've been in there since 8 o'clock getting set up. You'll probably come in around 9.
Yeah.
So you've had 6, 7, 7.5 hours of getting ready for service. That tasting takes about an hour. I mean, it's on air for about 2 minutes, but it takes about an hour and a half or an hour at least to get through it.
Yeah.
But they're opening the doors of the restaurant nearly by the time it's over.
It's all starting to happen.
So if you decide that the starters are going to change, at a push you'll have 20 minutes to change 8 hours of work. So that's why I always look like I'm just about to blow a gasket then at that stage. It took me about 3 years to learn Stevie was throwing me under the bus on a regular basis and loving it. You know what I mean? We laugh about it now, but I got smart then where I started butchering him in the main course, like, and making him change the whole menu and as much adding veg, adding potatoes. He hates making mash. So I'd be like, mate, if you keep changing the starters or annoying me, I'm gonna change the whole menu for everybody. You know what I mean? So, but it would all be in good jest. You
remember,
know what I mean? And crack.
I remember Dan, what was the name of the place they used to in Glad?
In Wineport.
In the Wineport.
Yeah.
I remember the pint of Guinness at the end of that was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I've never tasted anything like it. Because you've just worked your ass
And you wonder why chefs love a scoop.
Mac, it was just gorgeous, you know.
And when you say food in the recent years, what do you mean by that?
No, it's just I've become less hungry for some reason. Now, one of the reasons for it is I have type 2 diabetes, right?
Okay.
So my doctor in the last 2 years put me on this wonder drug,
right?
Ozempic, right?
Yeah.
It's
hunger's gone off.
It's just gone off me. Sometimes I'm okay, and it's same with drinking and things like that. It's just your appetite is kind of gone.
Sugar levels.
I take them every day.
Okay,
twice in the morning and in the evening time. But it was given to me. A lot of people are taking it for weight loss, but it was given to me because it does control blood levels and all that, and it does a great job.
Right.
But as a byproduct of that or whatever, you also do lose weight. I've lost a good bit of weight on it as well, but which, you know, happy enough about. But and I still have, like, for example, I used to love a good kind of a steak or a kind of a pasta sort of meal, but my wife might make that for us on a Tuesday evening. I'd sit down and then suddenly I say, I'm just not interested in this, you know. But it's a pity.
Yeah, it is.
Because I have a great joy for food and going to restaurants, and I still go out and do my best, you know.
Yeah. You're not the cook at home then?
Well, I do a little bit every now and again. One of my favourite cookbooks is there's one called The Prawn Cocktail Years. I don't know whether you ever saw it, but it's kind of good. It's very retro, and it goes back and it does all that, you know, your prawn cocktails. But it also does, like, we do a good Swedish meatballs.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, and they're kind of,
there's got to be a stroganoff in London there restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. All those things, you know, that you find, and cheesecake and all these things from kind of the 70s, 80s, that kind of area. And I enjoy doing it. I find it quite therapeutic, actually, cooking. It's probably,
a lot of people say that to me.
Yeah, they do, Yeah, it's funny, like, you see them dishes, like, that, you know, when we were kids, like, oh, geez, a prawn cocktail was expensive and fancy, and you'd only be frowned upon now. Well, I suppose it all depends on the prawns that you're using, you know what I mean?
Exactly,
like, some I use at the K Club, like, it was nearly 100 quid for a portion, like, with some of them, you know what I mean? Well, like, for select, if somebody wants something very unique, you know what I mean? Like, and they're these huge langoustines that we use, you know what I mean? Like, but then equally, you know, if you stuck just the regular prawn cocktail that we grew up looking at on a menu, you know, you'd be ran out of Dodge. Do you know what I mean?
Well, actually, I went to, it's going to sound like I'm a little crock here, but I started getting these kind of itches all over me, you know?
Right.
I went to an allergy clinic to ask them all about it. And they said, they did tests, and they said, it didn't really come up on that, but they gave me a kind of an air purifier, and they gave me all kinds of things. And then I was called back, and I went back in again, and I said it to the kind of the head man in there, but I said, you know, this problem. And I said, if I take an antihistamine before I go out, fine. And he says, well, why don't you just do that then? So, honest to God, that was it. So I still enjoy my prawns. And,
deadly.
You know.
There's nothing worse if you have an allergy. I mean, we deal with people coming into the restaurant all the time.
Yeah.
Like, if someone says, I'd be to the waiter, do they have an allergy or do they just not like it? Because it's a very different approach.
Yeah, I know. If they're
allergic, then it's a different setup. Yeah. Where if someone's saying, I don't like it, I'm like, that's okay. If you don't like it, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you've
ordered it though and you don't like it,
generally, do you know what's the thing now where people hand a card into the kitchen?
I've seen them.
You get this little card, and what it is normally is that someone is, that might be dealing with some type of gastro thing,
right,
and their doctor is doing a process of elimination.
So
like, they'll take out maybe onions, peppers, tomatoes, they'll all get taken out. And you'd eat.
Where's the fun in that, though?
Well, they're trying to find out what's going wrong. But you often get this card in, and it'd be like,
well, that's whenever shit gets real.
You look at newspaper, and you're ask them what they want.
I had one. The worst I ever had one night was doing a dinner, and I had 27 allergens, you know? And, like, that's not allergies. Like, that's just elimination for elimination's sake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're there, and you're thinking,
oh, it's a head warp.
Where do I start?
Yeah,
because... Because as a chef, when you're cooking at the highest level, and, you know, we're both in 5-star hotels, and you want the experience to be amazing. Now, this wasn't in the K Club. This was actually a few years ago for me. But I realized, and I had a bit of time in my hands, which was lucky. Like, this wasn't just thrown at me in the middle of service. Like, I was given it the day before. And the end up, what I did, because I just had this group and it was a tasting dinner, everything on the list had to come out of the kitchen. And then I pulled out everything that was left, and then I did it like a ready, steady cook. Well, that's what I did. I was like, well, you know what? I goes, I need to just take absolutely everything that's on the list out, because it did not matter what I did. I clicked on one of the 27, and I was like, oh my goodness, like, I'm absolutely struggling here now. And I says, I just got to get it all out of my sight and then get everything out on the table. And, you know, it's amazing how creative then you can become, like, when you're just looking at, I can do anything with anything that's on the table now. And it ended up being fine.
Probably better than fine, Gary.
Well, yeah.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef. Explore delicious recipes and discover their premium selection on johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef, a tradition of Irish dry-aged beef built on 60 years of passion. Learn more at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
has the world of being a DJ changed? Like, do you still choose
No.
You don't choose the music anymore?
No. It's all become very scientific.
How did you cope with that? Or was that always going to be the way commercially?
With difficulty. No, I was, for the first few years when I came into commercial radio, I was able to choose an RTE, and I was able to choose when I came into commercial radio. But it has become much more streamlined now. Yeah. And I kind of understand it too. And every, you know, like with Spotify and
there's a commercial though.
Yeah. All the music is commercial. Like, I mean, I used to be able to wake up in the morning and say to myself, I've got this song in my head, I'm going to play it today. And then I go in and play it.
You can't do that now at all. Not even if you want.
There would be an inquest.
Ed is laughing away because you can feel the pain over there.
No
right?
comment.
Yeah, the two boys are sitting across from each other. I
totally understand it, to be honest with you. And it's right, you know.
And what about the dude, your great friend, who...
Tony
would have come over to Westport Loads. One of my best mates and a good friend of Gareth's, Frankie Fish. Yeah. Tony loved his restaurant and Portmore in Westport. Yeah. And so I know he really loved his food. He would have been with Nora Casey and a few of his friends. Minis the time, you know.
He liked Goldies, as he called them.
The prawns. And would he have even been told? I mean, I think about you guys that are titans of your industry. That's like Gareth and I being told you can cook Grover Soul, you can cook John Doerr, you can cook ribeye, Cote de Boeuf, and that's it.
Yeah.
No, don't play around. Like, you boil potatoes and jackets and you cook veg with no butter and no whatever. I'd be like going, oh my God, what's the point of having us?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, it took me a while to come to terms with it, but I do kind of, like, I mean, what you do now is you concentrate on what goes on content in between, you know, on microphone, and you try and make that as entertaining. Or
has it opened your musical mind? That's probably the right way to put it. Yeah, is it getting you to listen to different
things? Yeah, but I mean...
Or do you die a bit inside every day?
turn down the volume on the speakers. I mean...
Maybe it's the wrong place to be asking
this. Exactly,
We're very close to home here.
It's absolutely fine. And I still enjoy every single morning. And I when I get up...
You still love going to work?
Still love it, yeah. I still love talking to people on the radio and just connecting in some way with them, you know. So I think there are ways around it. And I mean, there are still surprises every now and again. And there's a great team working on the whole thing. Now, I'm not only saying that because I feel that do a disclaimer.
Shauna's on your team, is she?
Shauna,
I know Shauna. Yeah, she's amazing. Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah, there you are.
But I must say, I always think that you were talking about pressure and all that earlier on there, and I don't want to be leading you in another direction, but I always think that stand-up comedy and chefing must be the most pressurized jobs. I mean, they're looking at the bear, looking at that. Remember that Stephen Graham one?
Boiling Point.
The bear is actually a fairly close.
Yeah.
It's as close as
really?
I've ever. Yeah, and you know what they don't tell you? I'm sure your job is the same. No one gives you the skill set really to deal with the stuff that's coming at you.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a kitchen where, and that's why I always get asked the question by parents a lot, my kid wants to go into the cooking world, and I'd be like, do your research on the type of kitchen that you're going to put them in.
Yeah.
Like, try and get...
They're probably all different as well, aren't they?
All different, but also you want to get in at the highest level that you can cook at. I think that's important that you get in early. Because you need to learn your craft, because it's a very craft-driven industry.
Yeah.
And then also, the personalities have to work. Like, so you have to work with somebody because you're going to spend a lot of time
with
each other.
Yeah, it's like a little marriage or a little household.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, exactly. And then look, it's like, you know, Gary has a bigger brigade than I do, but, you know, I've 30, 40 people in my brigade. Gary's up around the 50, 60 mark. So, you know, you have all these different personalities that you have to manage. Yeah. You have to get them all working at a really high level.
Yeah.
But really, when you lose it, or when anyone loses it within the brigade, it really means that something's wrong somewhere.
Yeah.
So, like, then you have to step back from it and go, right, well, why did that happen? Like, does something happen in service there? Because something's not in place. Yeah. And it's our job as the exec chefs to go, right, I need to stand back from this. I need to reevaluate. Yeah. Maybe the menu's too big. Maybe you know, why aren't the guests ordering starters? Maybe the starters aren't quite right for this particular restaurant.
Maybe they're all on Ozempic.
But also the service team need to identify someone that's on the table, maybe that has a much smaller appetite and go, look, someone out here, they're just not hungry.
The variables are incredible, you know, and when you start breaking it all down, you could be driving
yourself. That's not what you got into it for in the first place. You
yeah, but
for the food, but you suddenly end up having to.
But really, it all comes back to the food. I think that's the thing you need to.
You do find, like, as you know, anybody will tell you in the cooking game, you know what I mean? Like, that, you know, talent probably gets you to head chef and executive chef roles.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you're at boardroom tables with CEOs, owners, director of finance, and all of that. And then it is about money.
Yeah.
And I think in your early, early years of being a head chef or a, you know, a sous chef or whatever it may be, when you start getting those conversations, I mean, your first inclination is to bite back and say, no, well, that's the mushroom I want to use, and that's the tomato I want to buy, and that's the whatever. And then you grow up and you realize that, right, now you got to be able to cook at the highest level and make money. And if you're not making money, you're pointless to everyone. So you've got to find that sweet spot of, all right, I can't use that tomato, but let's change the dish or let's tweak it. And then you really start, you know, that's where seasonality and buying the right things at the right time come in. You know what I mean? And don't be flying in your mushroom from Russia, and don't be trying to get this, that, and the other from here and there. And you know, I suppose chefs and food in the culinary world has all gone through some mad changes over the years. You know what I mean? But right now it's in a brilliant place. It's in that place where it would have been growing up, where people are growing food and cooking stuff and not messing around with 100 things on a plate and just good proteins and good carbs and good whatever, you know.
I wouldn't say it's a bit like, I mean, you obviously have to stay well dialed into what's going on in the world of music.
Absolutely.
The world of everything, because you run a live radio show.
You do have to keep in touch with what's going on, as I'm sure you guys do in the world of food and all that. And I often wonder with restaurants, like, ordering too much, like, just the idea, is that your responsibility, or
creature of habit.
That's what people like to hear in this. Now, ultimately, that's what it is.
Yeah,
and I mean, running any kitchen, it's the same as what you do at home, but just on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, when you're in the supermarket, and supermarkets are designed where they have you psychologically, the bread is at the front of the shop.
Yeah.
It smells amazing and it gets your appetite started. And
I know.
That's why it's there, you know. And then, like, as you get into the middle bit, it's more the mundane. And then when it's at the end, all the sweet stuff is there. It's all
little treats.
Yeah,
Everything gets smaller because it still fits in the bag.
Yeah. And suppliers are exactly the same, you know. They can match you with all the goodies early doors. But, I mean, it's our job to make sure that everything is in sync. And, you know, that's a huge part of it. And I would be the same. I never worry about going into work, or I'm never. And I always talk to people that do say that they hate their job. And
yeah, like, there's something wrong.
It'd be an awful way to live.
Yeah.
Really hating your job, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, because going way back to the start, like, I mean, pirate radio was probably, you started dabbling in that.
Oh, I did, yeah.
What did that look like? No. Was that
how anybody gets picked up, like, if you want to make it a career? Was that always the ultimate goal?
Well, at the time, that's what it was, you know. I remember hearing a girl called DJ Sylvia on Radio Dublin, who used to come on and say, "Good afternoon, Dublin," and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And she was great, and she was really popular, and DJ Lee and all these people. And I said, I want to do that, you know. And I was just at the right age. I suppose I was lucky in a way. And a friend of mine had a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and I said, I want to do that. And he said, well, come on over to the house. And we did a tape, which I still have at home. Very embarrassing. It's really good. I was putting on a voice, and you know, all the things you do.
Ed does radio voice here all the time. I'd be laughing at him.
He's jealous, so am I.
But I got it. But like, I thought I got it. Oh my God, I got the gig. But it was only because nobody else was doing it. You know, they just needed somebody to fill. So I did. I did about 3 or 4 different pirate stations, and then I kind of manipulated my way out of one to go to another when it became more attractive. And then the RTE thing happened. So it was all, timing was good for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it the first time in 1979, but then in 1980 I got it, and I joined them in 1980. But the pirate days were amazing, because it was, you literally brought your bag of records with you. You know
but
what
people
I mean?
Like hung on to hear a new song.
Oh yeah.
Where now it's like phone.
Exactly, yeah.
The phone actually tells you what you should be listening to. Like, you know, you like this genre, right? Listen to this and go, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it has changed immensely. And even down to when I started off, like, I mean, you used to do competitions for, you know, to give away a bike or give away whatever. And you'd ask people to send in a postcard.
No way.
Self-addressed envelope or that kind of thing.
That's right.
And you'd have these postal competitions. Remember Gay Byrne on the
Yeah.
Big bucket of stuff from the postal. Nowadays, literally a competition can be over in 10 minutes. Send it in. Yeah, there's the winner. Good luck. Right, move on. You know, so it's all become a little bit... I don't think we give
Who was taking in all these letters in RTE? Yeah, like whenever, because I'm sure there was thousands coming in, was there?
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
You know? Like you used to see a vat, literal vat of postcards and Gay digging deep down, picking out and, you know.
Wow.
But and then sometimes, I mean, like, you know, it would be over now with WhatsApp in seconds. Back in the day, you'd be saying, we're going to extend the closing date on that for another week or whatever. You know
just
what
I mean? Milk.
Yeah. For an old bike.
Jesus, everybody loved the chopper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it was radio that you started in and how long then before the Den came about? Was it?
It was around 1980. I just got married in 1986. And when I came back, they said, would you fancy auditioning for this? They wanted to do basically continuity, which was like, you know, just the way Thelma Mansfield or people like that used to do. And then she became Live at Three. So they wanted to do continuity for kids. So I was literally supposed to just say, and now here's Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse or something like that. And then we kind of developed it and the links got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, as I said, we brought the guys in and as well. So that's literally how it started. But that was 86 and... I had no plans. I am still a radio man. Like, I mean, television wouldn't really interest me unless it was, you know, the right thing.
Why do you say that? What's so alluring for radio?
I think radio is much more, you've much more control over it, right. You know, in what you're doing, because you've got a microphone, you switch on your microphone, whereas in television, you've got a lighting person, you've got somebody standing there with a clipboard, you've got a sound guy, you've got a director, and everybody wants to do their job properly as well. Yeah. You know, and they're understandable. And everything has to be written up. There's big kind of running orders.
Scripts,
you can wing it.
Our radio is amazing. I take it over TV any day of the week. Yeah. It's class.
Yeah,
that's
great. Yeah.
Yeah. And, once you've been exposed to both. Yeah.
I've been lucky enough to survive in it for quite some time.
And you know, not many do.
Yeah.
It's a very fickle industry.
Larry Gogan would have been my inspiration, you know.
Yeah.
He lasted fairly well too, you know, so. That was
and is there I suppose you don't want to be sharing them secrets, like, but I mean, like, is it the likes of what you said there earlier, like, where you just don't let your ego get in the way of, like, say somebody telling the likes of you what you can and can't play? Like, do you just
go by the rules? You sign your contract, and I mean, you do have to remember every time that somebody owns it, and that's why I always wanted to get into it. They own it, so it's theirs. They can do what the hell they want.
Yeah,
with it, you know. And you might say, well, I think it should be done this way, but sorry, don't go into kind of Nestle and say, well, you know, I think those buttons should be kind of ink or something. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you just say, okay, right, they're the buttons. Let's sell them.
Yeah.
I don't know what Cadbury's will think about Nestle. Sorry.
I'm only joking. I don't even know who thinks. Yeah.
But I suppose, you know, like, that's actually a really good way of looking at it. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta remove emotion from it. And
yeah, it can be an ego. Can be frustrating, but I've got over that now. And now.
But you're
loving it, as they say.
You're there too. I mean, you're waking people up, right? It's lighthearted, and not to play it down in any way.
No,
but the last thing you want to be doing when you turn the radio on is anyone coming at you real hot and heavy, like, first thing, you know?
Exactly,
so you want someone that's
no AC/DC.
Joyous. But even down to the news, sometimes, some mornings I'm in the car at 5:30, and the news comes on. I'm like, Jesus, man, I don't hear that yet. It's a break, wouldn't it? A cup of coffee at least.
Yeah. You know? Unfortunately, nowadays with the news, you're kind of saying, I really don't need this today. You know? There's so many important stories out there, but at the same time, it's just got so much, really, you know?
Oh, it is. It is for sure. But look, we always kind of go down the route of Last Supper.
Yeah, yeah.
We're still doing Last Supper.
Yeah, for sure.
Because Ian is our first guest in season four.
Oh!
So we always Jesus change God. Up a wee bit, but I think we'll keep the last.
No, that's a, it's an important
one. Important one for us, yeah. What is your last supper?
Well, I'd go... the center of it would be
if you knew you were getting the guillotine in half an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, the center of it would be now. You're going to be horrified by this. A dirty doner kebab.
Oh wow! Yeah,
love
deadly.
Oh, yeah. We love these answers. I hate when someone a mistake. Yeah. Like, come on,
Now, you're an outsider, so you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Julio's in Balfour.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Julio's
yeah.
The doner kebab there is top notch.
Right,
really good. And a friend of mine actually the other night recreated it in his house. And he did the kind of, what do you call the big slabby thing?
The flatbread, yeah, yeah.
No.
The actual kebab itself.
He actually made that.
Stop.
Yeah.
Where did he cook it? In his oven or on the barbecue?
In his oven, yeah. Now, it wasn't quite as big as the one you'd see
right,
in
yeah,
the window.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and sliced them down.
Oh, yeah.
Ken Wickstone is his name. Very good. If you're ever looking for a kebab chef.
Right.
In the K Club.
Yeah. Hey, we're always looking for something different.
But it was beautiful, very nice. So that would be the center of it. I think I'd start off with my prawn cocktail. My wife has started putting pomegranates into it. Have you? Is that
into the prawn cocktail?
Prawn cocktail.
Okay.
Just a bit of crunch.
Yeah.
We also use
pomegranate.
Yeah.
We use the kind of classic red sauce.
Mary Rose, yeah.
Yeah, the red one.
Right, okay.
Not the, you know the way a lot
cocktail
of people do
sauce,
the pink
I think
one?
Yeah. It, yeah.
Oh, you
yeah.
make an American style yeah, cocktail yeah. sauce with horseradish and red
yes,
sauce,
yes.
Worcester,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Beautiful.
So,
bit more heat in it, yeah.
Yeah, it's very nice. And so we'll have that to start. We have my doner kebab there. I might have one of those to start off. I might have one of those Desperado, you know those beers? The
ones with the tequila in it.
With the tequila in it.
Yeah,
well, it smells. It's, I'm on the way out, like, you know what I mean?
You're a good day with a ship.
All in. Love it.
And then for afters, you probably know this because this is a kind of a posh dessert. I had it down in a hotel in Cork called the Montanotti Hotel.
Oh, great yeah, spot. Yeah, I always yeah. stay there when I'm in Cork.
Yeah, it's very good. Place. Good spot. They
yeah, it's beautiful.
I love the place you can sit out. You know, the
yeah.
Kind of
yeah. Terrace, you're just really overlooking Cork City. Yeah, it's
beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. But they did this, it's called Paris Breast.
Oh, Paris yes. Breast. Oh,
Paris
yeah.
Breast, isn't
yeah.
it?
Paris yeah. Breast, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, yeah. It's the shoe bone.
It's basically
yeah.
a shoe bone.
We actually yeah. ordered a second one. It was,
oh, wow.
It's good effort.
Yeah, I know.
There's a lot of eating. There's a lot of eating in a Paris Breast.
There's a lot of sugar in it as well. So.
It's no wonder you're on the Ozempic. Yeah.
It's actually from the city of Bressay over in.
Well, it's all to do with the bike race.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Right.
They celebrate the bike race. Yeah, yeah from Paris yeah. to Brest. Yeah,
and I've looked up the recipe a few times, and I keep saying I must try that now. Yeah. Would that be a difficult one to do?
Not at all, no, because it's just a basic shoe pastry.
Yeah,
it's a shoe pastry that. That's just piped, like for the knee clair, it's just one long line that's piped. For a profiterole, it's just one big dot that's piped. But for the Paris Breast, it's almost like one circular motion where you just, like a donut, where you have a gap in the center.
That's right, yeah.
And then the key thing about using choux pastries, you can never, ever, ever touch the oven door when you're cooking it. Because if the air escapes the oven, it'll collapse. And once it collapses, you will never, you just got to start again. So if you ever go to make it and you're like, geez, I wonder, is it ready? And you open the oven door, disaster.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
I'm going to throw this out there. I think that's the best answer we've ever had.
A Paris Breast.
Because you went everywhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's all over the world. He went over the classic.
A prawn cocktail is up there, one of my favourite things to eat in the world. I love it.
Then he went to the Middle East.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And then he finished with
he's back in France.
One of the classiest desserts out there. I'm all washed down with it. With a beer laced with tequila.
Yeah, and a fucking Mexico or whatever. Yeah.
Love it.
And if I'm allowed wine, seeing as
why not?
My favorite wine is a Vina Alberti, I think it's called. It's a Rioja, and I get it out in Port Marnock, your man out there.
Oh, it's very good wine shop there.
Yeah, very good wine shop. What's it called again? Oh, I would say it's play on words. It's Just Divine.
Oh, yeah. No, it's one on the right there. Yeah, it's very good.
It's very, very good. Excellent.
And we react. Jeez, you're going down with the ship, Ian.
Yeah, big time.
That's Spain as well. Jeez, yeah, all over the world here. It's like the World Wide Web.
Around the world in 80 flavors. Eh? Well, that's a lovely way to wrap up. I know I want a kebab.
Yeah, exactly.
And a Paris Brest. Yeah. Deadly. Well,
there's
thanks
something
so much.
About
so
the
much.
Kebab, though. Yeah. There really
oh,
is,
man.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's great. Yeah. But look, it really means the world. We know you're a busy man and you probably want to get home in the mornings instead of staying on. So we really appreciate it. Thank you
so much.
Thank
you, Gary. Thanks, Gareth.
Thanks a million.
Yeah.
All right.
And keep up the great work. Fair play to you.
Wow. Ian Dempsey. That was brilliant.
Legend.
Yeah. I loved his Last Supper.
Oh, it was unreal, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, big time, yeah. And also, like, I didn't realise it, only when you start saying how long he's been on radio, and I didn't realise
he's chatting since 79. Yeah, it's crazy. I was like, oh my goodness.
78, I think.
So we're nearly 50, what do you think about it, man, dear?
Shut up, Billy.
I mean? Keep thinking that we're
you
young.
Keep dragging me down today. What's this about?
I hate to tell you, brother. I'm 46 anyways, man. I'm the wrong side of 50. You know what I mean? And Ian Dempsey's going a while, but...
Yeah, he's brilliant.
What a great lovely, guest. Lovely man, you know? And yeah, just I didn't know he was diabetic either. Like, it's mad, you know.
No, but Jesus, he wasn't thinking about his diabetics when he gave us his last supper, man. Kebabs, party breasts.
He's like going, yeah, shove your diabetes up your hole. Give me a doner kebab, a lock of beer.
So look, with that being said, I think we'll jump into our recipe of the week. So as we said, with our new sponsor on board, John Stone, they sell these boxes online that you can go on and order on www.johnstonebeef.com. And the first one that I'm going to do, it's their John Stone hand-selected steak gift box. Now, I've used this box a good few times over the summer, and you can go on and buy it online. So in the box you get some ribeye steaks, some fillet steaks, some côte de bœuf, which is basically a ribeye that's on the bone. There's also some of that beef dripping that I spoke about, and then they throw in some steak burgers and some jumbo sausages. So loads going on there. The products that you get off them, they're actually frozen, so when you get them home, you just put them all in your freezer, and then the day before you need them, you just put them down the bottom of your fridge to defrost. So I'm going to pick the fillet steaks, because I think it's where most people will feel most comfortable. The barbecue of fillet steak, all you do, take it out of the fridge, obviously defrost the first, and then you take it out of the fridge, open the backpack bag, put it out onto a tray, and... pat it dry really well with some kitchen towel. Then drizzle it with a little bit of vegetable oil. Make sure your barbecue is piping hot, and then you're going to grill those fillet steaks for 2 or 3 minutes on either side, and that's going to give you a perfectly cooked medium rare fillet steak. We've spoken loads of times on how to cook steaks. What I want to talk about today is how to make probably the most classic sauce to go with a fillet steak, and that's a peppercorn sauce. Something that I really love.
Who doesn't?
So do I. I mean, I don't think I've ever cooked a fillet steak and not cooked a peppercorn sauce. So to make one, you're going to need some shallots. It is important. I know they're quite a chefy ingredient. The little small onions, you're going to really finely chop them. Then you need some black and white peppercorns. And if you want to get fancy, get some pink and green as well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
the green ones, you buy them, you'll see them, they're in a little jar or a little tin, they're in brine. They really will elevate your peppercorn sauce up a level. Crush your white and black peppercorns in a mortar and pestle. And then you're going to fry off those shallots in a little bit of oil in a small pot on a knob of butter till they're nice and soft. Couple of sprigs of thyme. Then I want you to throw in those couple of tablespoons of crushed peppercorns. At that stage, you're going to hit that with a little bit of cognac or a little bit of brandy. Quite important, again, that you use that. And at that stage, if you're feeling chefy, you can flambe it, which means that the flame on your stove is going to hit it and the alcohol in the cognac will just set on fire. If you're worried about that, take it to the side, add the brandy or the cognac, and then just put it over a low heat, and you want to reduce that down by half. Then at that point, all you're going to do is add in some double cream. You're going to bring it back up to the boil, and I like to put a little quarter of a teaspoon of Dijon mustard. I think it just gives you another little layer of flavor. If I'm in work, we add a little bit of jus or demi-glaze or... But when I'm at home, I don't bother with it, to be honest. I just... you can put a stock cube in it if you want.
The wee Knorr beef, the wee jellified stock cubes are nice. But again, not needed.
Not necessary. No. But really, you want your peppercorn sauce to have a bit of heat. So after you have the right consistency, I want you just to grab a little teaspoon, have a taste of it, make sure there's enough salt and loads of pepper in there. If you feel that there's not enough spice in there, more cracked black pepper. And that's it. Perfect peppercorn sauce. Any juices that ran off your steak while you were resting, you can pour them into the sauce as well. Bring it back up to the boil. And I would say put the sauce or put your steak in the center of the plate and cover it in the peppercorn sauce. Bring it to the table with some triple cup chips or whatever chips you have and a lovely green salad. And it's that good. That's as simple as it's going to get. And go and buy yourself that steak box from Johnstone.
Yeah, that's a beautiful start to the recipe series, guys. Yeah, I mean, there's not much nicer than a filet mignon au poivre. Beautiful.
Ooh, French.
Okay, so with that being done, we move into our... bit that I've missed. I've missed getting asked the old questions. More importantly, I've missed all my old mate.
Do you want to hear my DJ voice?
Yeah.
We had a couple of weeks away from Ed Chef.
You just want to hear my DJ voice.
Correct. Correct.
To send your conundrums in food at goaloudnow.com. Yeah. Anyway, we are starting off with three great questions. Thanks as ever for everyone who is sending in their conundrums. Hello, Gareth and Gary. So delighted you guys are back for a new season. Congrats. My conundrum is a basic one, really. I often host dinner parties and struggle with timing everything perfectly. Do you have any tips for preparing multiple dishes so that everything is ready at the same time? Many thanks, Helen Foley in Cork.
Well, Helen...
Hire a personal chef, Helen. Send out our number later on.
hire a personal chef. But feeling that there, one of the best tricks of the trade is to cook a menu where you eliminate as many pots as possible. And this is something that Gareth and I would have talked extensively, especially leading into Christmas dinner. Christmas dinner is one of those dinners where, you know, there's lots of sides, there's lots going on, there's sauces, there's stuffings, there's veg, there's potatoes, there's two or three potatoes, two or three veg, the whole nine yards. And even us as chefs, we cooked that meal. And one of the best tricks I ever came up with was always having a wee bit of preparation the day before. Think ahead, make a list, get your timings right. All these little things kind of help you just to kind of have a gauge of what you're doing. And then, you know, anything that fits in the oven and you eliminate pots and pans will really, really help you in your timings. The one thing that's going to send you all over the shop is if you've got a sauce on, you're trying to make a stuffing on a stovetop, you might have a veg on, you'll be trying to boil a carrot, you might have a green veg, whether it's a petit pois or a broccoli or a sugar snap, and you're trying to figure out how to keep it green or do whatever. So go with stuff that you can roast. Get as much out of pots and pans. Change your mash to a pomme dauphinoise or a roast potato. Change a boiled butter vichy carrot to like a roast carrot. Do the same with a turnip or a parsnip if you're doing it. Avoid things that are green. Get as much as possible off the stove and that'll be your greatest help.
Great stuff. Thank you, Gary. Going up to Armagh now. Big times up in Armagh recently, yeah. Hi, guys. I've recently developed an interest in Thai cuisine and the reviews from the amateur food critics in my house are not good. That's nicely put, isn't it?
The fact he called them amateurs.
What are the key ingredients I should always have in my pantry? And could you recommend a beginner-friendly recipe to start with? Any help greatly appreciated, especially by my wife and kids. Jason and Armagh.
I bet I know what most people do in the supermarkets. They sell those little things of like Thai green chili and Thai red, you know, the curry pastes, and people think you buy them, you put it in a pot with some coconut milk and you're going to get like what you get if you order a Thai takeaway. Like those pastes are basically the base for making up the rest of the dish. So I would say the first thing you need to do is invest in a Thai cookery book. Like most of the recipes are very detailed, and once you start understanding that Thai cookery is about balancing a few different things. So generally you're trying to balance the heat, which is the chili, with the sourness is going to come from your lime juice or your tamarind, along with your saltiness will always be coming from your fish sauce, and then the sweetness will come from palm sugar, and then that's it, really. That's the four things that you need to balance. Now, you can start moving into, you know, you can start bringing more freshness in with Thai basil and coriander and mint, and all those things are brilliant. But I would say, if you get yourself a recipe for a Thai green curry paste, buy the shop bought curry paste. Don't be too aggressive when you're using it, and then figure out the seasoning bit of it. So that's where you're going to add in a little bit more chili, a little bit more palm sugar, a little bit more lime juice, and a little bit more Thai fish sauce. And when you start tasting that, you need to balance all those things. So if you taste it and it's too salty, it needs a little bit more palm sugar. If you taste it and it's a little bit too hot, you're probably going to add in a little bit more lime juice to bring the acidity levels up a little bit, and maybe a little bit of coconut milk.
I think it's David Thompson, is it?
It's the best cookery book I own.
Am I right, David? Yeah. I mean, there's the guy's brilliant. He's an Australian chef.
Yeah, when I lived out in Australia, he owned a restaurant down in Sydney called Darley Thai. And one of my good mates was a sous chef there. I think I've said that on here before. But he released a cookbook called David Thompson's Thai Cookery. It's a bright pink, cerise pink book.
Yeah, grey and pink cover on it.
And he was actually, he's the only Western chef that was given access to the Thai consulate's cookery books, the original Thai consulate.
Oh, wow.
And he basically, it looks like a Bible. It's a massive big book. Now, starting out, I think that book would engulf you if you weren't used to Thai cookery. I think I'd start somewhere a little bit lighter than that. But yeah, that's the best Thai cookery book on the market. But yeah, you're nearly there. It's just, you know, there's a lot of trial and error that goes on with Thai cookery.
And that's with all cooking
techniques
and different cultures, you know what I mean? It's just trial and error. It's just brilliant that you're trying and keep trying.
You need to have fish sauce, palm sugar, lime juice, coconut milk. You need to have them in your cupboard before you start.
Great stuff, and good luck to you, Jason. Now we're going to Louth next. Interesting question from Michael Carthy. Congrats on the new season. Absolutely loving every episode so far. My conundrum is more of a myth-busting exercise, or not, as the case may be. In many kitchen-based TV shows and movies, you often see the chef storm out to confront a particularly difficult patron. Otherwise, everyone's looking at Gary here.
Even Gary looked at Gary.
Has this ever happened to either of you? Cheers, Michael.
No, but it's my ultimate dream. I came very, very, very close to doing it in Viewmount House once. It was somebody was extremely rude to one of the girls. But it was a big, big thing in Harvey's back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, when Marco had Harvey's. You know, it was commonplace for him to get someone by the throat and guide them back out onto the street. Lots of them were journalists, as it turned out. But no, I think you've got to take the moral high ground and you know, not do it. You know, staff also have to know that they're in a safe place when they work with you. You know what I mean? That, you know, if they got to know that if anybody ever got out of line to a point, they would be removed. You know what I mean? And probably had one episode in France where, you know, it didn't remove the guy, but his own friends removed him, and really, really crossed the line. And I had a little word in his ear, and he sat back down again. But and then his own friends told him to go to bed. You know what I mean? He'd humiliated himself enough, and that's usually what happens. You know what I mean? But no, not something that I've got to do. I've got close.
The wistful look in Gary's eye.
Yeah.
What about you?
No, you'll always get guests in a room that can be tricky, you know, and really it's kind of the maitre d's job if there's a guest in the room and they're being challenging over something. And generally speaking, when a guest is being challenging over something, it's normally alcohol induced in some way.
But how many times if I was to send a dish back going, you know, it's, and then you go, sorry, okay, I'll do it again. And then I send it back again. Is there a cutoff point where you go, do you know what?
No, generally, we wouldn't understand the.
It's never happened.
But sometimes the people around you get more excited about a dish coming back. you know, like the person that's cooked it, or like the waiters, oh chef, he's had to send this back. And we go, that's okay.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, but he said it's not medium rare. And I'd be like, okay, well, if what way does he want it? Because generally speaking, they wanted a rare steak or they wanted a medium steak. Yeah. And then you just go, go and find out exactly what he wants, and then, or she wants. And then you'll go and you'll just try and deliver to that. And 9 times out of 10, like if somebody is in my restaurant and they send something back and the rest of the table have food, we'll offer to take all the food away while we fix that one, or we'll send out a sorbet for that guest and they can enjoy a sorbet while everybody else is eating. Mm-hmm. And if it really is going to, if it was a big lump of meat that's going to take a while to cook, then I would insist on the food coming back in off the table and we'd fix the food on the table.
And you'd be amazed, Dad, like that, you know. I'm not going to say that it's commonplace, like in certainly in the Marker or the K Club, but if anybody told you that doesn't happen and something goes back, they're lying. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because it just, you know, you're not getting your hands on every single thing, and the chefs that are cooking under pressure, there's always going to be a little mistake. And then food is so subjective. Like when you cook in America, medium rare is French medium rare. When you cook in France, medium rare is medium rare. When you cook in Ireland and it's an Irish customer, so not only is medium rare, you're like, is it an Irish customer? Okay. Yeah. Is it an English customer? Are they American or are they French? And it has definitely changed because Irish people are traveling an awful lot more, and they're getting, like, they're knowing now to say medium if they want. What they would have once thought is medium rare is really.
I'll tell
medium,
a funny story about, you know, this actually that just came to me now. Right, I got married over in Italy, and we were in a restaurant, myself, my wife, and my father-in-law ordered one of the big T-bones. What do they call them over there? And a Florence steak. It's basically a T-bone steak, and he ordered it well done. And this chef did not want to cook this steak well done. Right? Yeah. Anyway, it came out. We were all eating. He was trying to eat and he was like, it's just too bloody. And I was like, just tell him to cook it a little bit more. Anyway, sent it back to cook it a little bit more. Brought it back in. Your man, I'd say it didn't even kiss the grill, right? Yeah. Just went in and came back
just
out again. Yeah. So I see the cover back out. I was like, there's no way, man, that thing is cooked anymore. And my father-in-law was looking at me. And I was like, yeah, go on, crack on. Yeah, good looking. Anyway, still under. So I have to send it back in. So sent it back in. And the chef, I think there was a communication thing going on. He just didn't understand.
Okay.
The waitress didn't understand that he wanted to stay cooked a bit. Anyway, at this point, the chef cooked it a little bit more. And you could see him looking out and he bleeding cremated the steak. It was exactly how my father-in-law wanted to eat it. One of the best steaks he's ever eaten.
Wow. Like, my old boy would have been the same.
Now, since then, he eats them a little bit more. I'm not going to say
I educated him.
But yeah, exactly. But I remember thinking to myself, what is this fella going to come out of the kitchen say?
Yeah,
that's probably as close as I've ever gotten to see a chef coming out of the kitchen.
Great conundrums to kick off the new seasons. Thank you, Michael, Jason and Helen. Keep them coming in at food@goloudnow.com. How's that for a DJ voice?
Okay, so first episode in the bank, Gary, that was a bit of crack.
Yeah,
glad we got it done. And more importantly, with our new sponsor. So if you are interested in going to check them out, they're at www.johnstonebeef.com.
I think we have a code, Gaz.
Another little bit of exciting news that when you go and you pick up one of these boxes, you just put in, it'll ask you for a discount code, and you put in JSBDO, and it will give you an additional 10% off at checkout. So look, we'll also put that in. We share this on socials every week, the little snippet and all
the information. For anybody that doesn't understand Dublin, that was JSBDO for everyone north of Carlo. Jesus. That's what that's
everyone meant. North of Drimnagh. Look, thanks a million, and we'll talk to you next week with more recipes, chats and a bit of crack as always. Good luck.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Fine Foods. Get premium Irish dry-aged beef delivered to your home at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.